session number 17628, Joseph Clark, Reel 6.
Mr. Clark, Reel 5. Were there any early preparations which led you to believe that you were about to go abroad?
No, not really. I mean, we didn't have to change uniforms or anything like that. We already had battle dress and all the equipment we needed. No, we didn't know. We didn't know until it happened. You go on.
And you said you went to Southampton?
We went by train to Southampton.
How did you feel? You were a pit lad, never been out of the county, presumably, and here you are, yes. You're going to a foreign land.
Mm-hmm.
What were your feelings?
It was strange. Yeah, I'd never been out of the country, you're right. Yes, we all got to Southampton.
Was it a spirit of adventure about it?
More or less.
Excitement?
I would think so, yes.
You went on your boat, set sail. What happened to you then? What was the journey like itself?
It was rough. I couldn't tell you the name of the boat because we weren't up to that. All we knew was we had to march on.
What was the date, by the way, that you left?
28th of January, 1940. And I believe it was so rough, we had to go down into the, what would you call them, down below.
The hold?
Yes, things like that, yes.
You weren't in any form of sleeping place?
No comfort, because it wasn't going to take long, apparently. And we finished up and we got ashore at Cherbourg. So we sailed from Southampton to Cherbourg.
Was there a lot of seasickness amongst you?
There was a lot. The sea was rough going across. I'd never been on a boat. None of us had, I don't think.
Were you escorted, do you know?
Yes. When we got even to Southampton, there was red caps there, you know. And when we got off at the other side, there was people waiting because, I learnt later, there'd already been an advance party gone, preparing the way. So they'd gone over maybe a week or two before us, and they knew all where we were going, but we didn't. So they were more or less an advance party that was sort of prepared the way for us. And they were waiting for us when we got to Cherbourg.
Were you fed on the boat, or did you have rations with you?
We had a haversack ration, I believe. I don't think we got it fed. No, I don't think so. I believe we would get a meal when we got off.
What were your first impressions of France?
Not very good. It was no better than what we left. No.
Were there any French people about that you saw immediately?
There was lots of them, but of course we couldn't come in contact with them, you know. We weren't at Cherbourg long, just sort of till we were put on the train. In fact, there was times we travelled in cattle trucks. We were put on the train and off to, could have been anywhere for all we knew. And we had a decent journey from Cherbourg. Can't remember how long, but we must have come to a station, and we were on transport again with trucks. And our company finished up in Fresnes-sur-Sarthe. This was a decent-sized village, and we didn't know what the village was going to be like, but Believe it or not, we finished up in a farmyard. And there was the farm and his family. And we, of course, there were different places, but in my particular case, we finished up at sleeping in the barns, stables and what have you, on straw. I remember one place where we used to go through the farm door. There was a big, one of these big farm doors, and they had the little one that the farm used to step through instead of open the big doors. We used to have to go through this little door and up the stairs, steps, ladders. We had to go up ladders into the loft, sleep on the straw. Washing facilities, we learned. There was a horse trough outside till they got things put right. I can even remember lads breaking the ice and getting washing hands and face. But we were there a while. The cook house was one of the outhouses. It had a roof, that's about all it had, mind. But the cooks used to, and this old cook from the First World War called him Bob Oliver. He was a character. He was a character. And he had the cooking, they were practically cooking out in the open, only they had a roof over their heads and that, you know.
This would be field kitchens, right?
Yes.
The food, was it French or English?
Oh, we got English food.
Still the same as you've been getting at home.
Yeah.
It was a particularly severe winter. And
it was.
It mustn't have been very warm for you.
It was. I think eventually there were some palliasses there, you know. Slept on them. Sometimes you never took your uniform off. Of course, this was just, we'll begin to realise then what the army was. Latrines, they had to be dug away down part of the farmer's field away from the house. And all there were was trench, you know, and wood put around. And it was only, you were only covered from the outside by hessian nailed to posts, you know. So people couldn't see you.
And did you have a post to sit on, was it? Trench underneath, that kind of...
That's what it was. It was more like a wooden bench, as the saying is, or a wooden post. this was beginning to...
And presumably as the trench was filled, it was filled in, was it?
Yes, when it got so far from the top, I think they used to pour... I don't know where it was, whether it was oil or what, or petrol or something, and set fire to it. Then when it burned out, it was covered with soil. And they used to mark it with a sort of a cross, and it marked foul earth, so that anybody else who was following us on, wouldn't dig that particular place. I'm nearly sure that was the words, foul earth.
Smell must have been pretty rough, was it?
Oh, my. You place for somebody to smoke.
Did you smoke, by the way?
Never. No. Still collected the ration, though, and I gave them to the lads. Because I always said if I didn't collect them, somebody else would get them. But I always lined up. When we lined up, I used to collect my ration.
What was the ration?
I think it was 50 cigarettes and 2 boxes of matches, I think.
And how long was that expected to last you?
Goodness knows. A lot of it was through the Red Cross, you know.
And it wasn't a fixed period, it could come any time?
No. Could be any time.
Smoking important to many men?
I think so.
To come back to your living situation... No form of heating for you at all in the billets?
No. There's one thing. When I went to school, I was taught French for about 4 years, and never thinking that one day it would come in handy, but it did. I mean, I'd only left school in 1932, by the beginning of 33, end of 32. And here we were 7 years later in France. And it got me out of a lot of problems. And one or two users as well, you know, they couldn't speak French, but I could get around, let's put it that way. I wasn't fluent. I mean, because I'd missed those years. But as the time went on, you did pick it up again.
So they use you as a bit of an interpreter?
More or less. I remember you were on about heating. Well, the farm woman, she had four children. And he had I don't know what his business was. I think he used to go out with the horse and cart, and he had more or less a sideline. I think he worked for what we would call the council, that type of thing. But anyway, it was so cold at night. At the time, she had a wireless, and got on talking to her one time in my happy way. And she said she would make us coffee. And said, well, you know, be all right. And at the time, at 9 o'clock at night, Lord Ho-Ho used to come on the wireless. So we arranged to go into the farmhouse about that time, you know. And she used to make the coffee with, grinding it. Put into some affair, and she used to grind the coffee and used to come out into a drawers type thing, and she used to make the coffee out of that, which was, and as time went on, more and more the lads wanted to come in, you see. But this lad from Horden, Arthur Temple, he could speak a bit of French as well, but we said to the lads, you're not going to get this for nothing. She was going to give it to us. So whoever came into the farmhouse, because there were big places, the farmhouse, whoever came in and wanted coffee, we used to collect 50-something from them. And we used to give it. She didn't want the money, but we used to collect it and give it to her. We always did that. I insisted that's what she got paid for it. I think at the time, she didn't want a lot of money. She didn't want anything, actually. I don't know what the value of a franc was, but we used to get 50 centimes each, which was a lot of money to her. So, I mean, they weren't too well off, I don't think. And that was what we did. We listened to William Joyce, Lord Ho-Ho, on a wireless. So that was a one concession we had.
What kind of response did you have to Ho-Ho?
We didn't know he was William Joyce at the time, but he should have been shot there and then. Well, they did do him at the end, didn't they?
So you obviously became quite friendly with the farm people.
Yes, they were all right.
Were you able to get some of the farm produce for some of your meals at all?
Well, to be quite honest, one of the lads, the hens used to lay all over the place. He used to find out where the hen was laid. And he used to get the eggs. You know, that it was really stealing, really. But it wasn't looked upon like that. It was more of a novelty, really. He used to get an egg. There wasn't a lot of it, but that was the laughable part, humorous.
There were children on the farm?
There was four. Four of them.
Did the soldiers' natural affection for children?
Oh, yes, used to give them, you know. When we used to get from the Red Cross anything like bars of chocolate or sweets or anything, the lads used to give them to the kiddies where they were over the moon. Oh, yes. Oh, they treated them well, the Bairns. I think a lot of them, they were the territorial ones, were married. We weren't married, you see. We were single lads. And a lot of them, they must have, if you could have only known, they must have been thinking about their own children back home. And I think that's probably why they treated them well. That was my knowledge of it, anyway.
The rest of the village and the inhabitants, did you get on well with those?
Yes, we used to go down into the village to a Staminia. That was a pub. And used to go along where they had more or less like what you call it, a restaurant type of thing, or a fish and chip shop. Well, their fish and chips weren't like ours. But we used to go in there and get a meal, which wasn't very dear.
What was the favourite meal for the soldier?
Oh, it was fish and chips. Sausage and mash. Oh, dear. Memories.
Drinking, of course, was it different from the beer that the troops had been used to?
I think the French beer, yes.
Did it cause problems, certainly initially when it was first tried?
Not that I know of. Not that I know.
Too drunk too early because the
No.
Wine, did it become a favoured drink?
I never knew it. Well, we couldn't spend much money, as you know. It was more or less to get something to eat. There's one of the lads that used to come. I always remember him. In fact, I went back to France to see his grave later on in life, 1965. But anyway, he was a lovely lad. He belonged Leadgate, I believe. And they called him Joe Holland. And he had lovely golden hair, Blondie. We called him Blondie. Smashing lad he was. And when this lad from Horde North attempted me, he would say, well, we're going down to get something to eat down the town. Well, I don't think it was a town. It might have been. So it was a decent-sized place. We called it the village, like. And he used to sit and wait. And so as ever we were ready to go out, he used to shout, hang on there, I'm going with you too. Because he couldn't order his meal. And we used to get his meal for him. But he's a lovely lad. And very friendly to everybody. But unfortunately, as time went on, he was killed. On the way back to Dunkirk. And I went to see his grave in this cemetery. I got it from the War Graves Commission. I knew he'd been killed, or at least I didn't know for sure. It was hearsay. Someone said it. He had been killed. And he's buried in a little village in a civilian cemetery, which part of it's set aside for, I think there's 36 graves in this village cemetery. The place is called Bull's Camp. Yes, I went back to see his grave with a friend of mine from Horden, 1965. And it was 25 years after, because he was killed in 1940. And funnily enough, when I saw his grave, the lad that's buried next to him, I knew nobody better.
What was his name?
Called him Botanic, but I never knew where he lived. He was in Durham, belongs up Durham. Called him Joe Tenick. And that was the only time that I knew, you know, your memory come. I know him. Or I knew him.
The French civilian population that you were moving amongst at this time, what was their attitude towards the war?
Well, I think they were in the same frame of mind as us, the ones we met. Yes, they were in the same frame of mind as us.
First World War never really reached as far as that, so they had no more experience of war than than you would have.
But in Frenius, you saw, if we were there a while, we got used to the farm kiddies and that, you know. We still did training.
I was coming on to training, because you said before that the training for as a motorised road was more intense then.
Yes.
What kind of training was going on?
Well, just the normal infantry training, you know, from the infantry manual.
Did you have more training bussing and debussing on to trips and so forth?
Yes.
Was there a special...
Not so much at Frenier. It was after we left Frenier and moved further up into the Somme area.
And the winter again here was very, very severe for
you. Oh, it was bad. It was a bad winter.
How long was Frenier, did you say?
Frenier yourself. Well, this would be February, wouldn't it? We left England on the 20th of January. So we'll be there all of February, I would think. I would be there probably all of February.
Where did you move to then?
From there, we were taken... we went up to the Somme. So we would go to a place called Alain-les-Marais. And we were billeted there. We were sleeping in an old factory space, sleeping on the floor again. And we were just doing the ordinary training there. But from there, it was Alain-les-Marais. From there, they moved us to... We used to go from there to dig these tank traps, trenches. And we went to a place called... We were taken there, you keep getting relieved by... But we're still at Alain-les-Marais. Went to a place called Martinsar. And we were digging these big tank traps. Of course, as fast as you were digging them, you know... You had to have pumps. I had a job once on the pump, pumping the water out.
Do you recall what form this digging took? Was it a trench of some kind? Or?
It was. There were large trenches capable of stopping, stopping a tank. And they used to dig down vertical. And as you dug down, you put large, what would you call them? Not tree trunks, but large pillars, posts, wooden. And to knock them down, they used to use more or less a sledgehammer type of thing. It had a large weight on and a rope, and you used to pull it up a... slide and then let it go on top of to thump the post down into the ground. And then as you got some of them in, they put wood behind, more like, I don't know what it was, would it be? I don't know, it would be...
like a revetment, was it? Keep the sides
in. Keep the side from falling down, and then you dug it down at an angle. Dug it down to the bottom of there as an angle. It was more like, well, you could call it brushwood, as the saying is, but it was slotted in along the behind these big posts that had been driven into the ground. But I did learn later on, I don't think they were used, because they had the Maginot Line at that time. Well, we never saw the Maginot Line. In fact, I don't think it was connected up. I don't think the Belgians would let it go through here before the war.
The miners must have found that work, which was...
Useful.
Experience they had.
Yeah, useful.
How did they do? Did they... A section dug by a particular platoon or company?
Well, a platoon would be detailed off. Probably from headquarters, the company would be told they would be on, and the company commander would detail his men off and so on.
Was there some form of rivalry?
We had to use gunboats. Shoot the eyes and clear, you know. We had to use gunboats.
Was there a rivalry as to who could dig the best?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Was it just the ditch? Were there any other fortifications that were being built around this area?
Not that we were digging. Not that we were digging.
So whilst you were digging that, you couldn't be training?
Oh, no. No, no. That's why you'd keep changing over, you see. We used to come back to Allenley and Marie. You know, and probably another company would send men down. I don't know. And we were in Allenley, Marie, week or so.
You didn't have much time to get to know anyone?
No.
Did you notice any change between the attitude of the people around Frenisasat area, well down into France, and those nearer the frontier?
I think the ones when we moved up to Allens, we were more or less moving into a zone where war could be imminent. And I think that maybe there was a difference between the ones south at Fenier. These people realised, or they must have realised, there was something going to happen.
You know. Were they still very friendly? And get on well with them?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were all right. But it wasn't a bad village, actually. I believe not far from there was a cinema. And we did manage to get up to see these pictures. It was an English picture with French down the side, so that you could understand it. It was spoken in French, but they had the English down the side. I don't know the name of that village. It wasn't far. It was near enough to walk from Allen. Of course, after Allen, Allen and Maria, we went to... There was two villages. One was called Petit Attiche and the other was Grand Attiche, which was large and small. And we just carried on from there, even going there to dig and training. I can't remember the headquarters near Gondor. There was a village around there called Gondacord, but I'm not so sure.
That was in the Lille area, wasn't it?
We hadn't got to the Lille. We weren't far away, but we hadn't got there.
Did you get into Lille for any leave or break or leisure time?
This was when we moved later on.
That was another move.
Oh, yes. We left... I wish I could remember the name of the headquarters. In fact, I used to play football for A Company. And this lad from Tudor, Joe White and me, we were picked to play for the battalion when we were at Petit Attiche. And we had to go up into Belgium. And we were playing the 2nd Battalion, Durham Light Infantry. Somehow the officers must have gotten their heads together, maybe hadn't met for a long time. And we went to a place called Rochon. And it was in Belgium, and we played the 2nd Battalion Durhams from there, from Petit Attiche. And then we moved from there to... what was the next place? Ferrières, which was about 5 miles from Amiens. And we moved again, living in stables and what have you. That wasn't a bad place, but we didn't get to know much of them.
Was the training...
The officer had a billet... They were billeted in houses, French people's houses.
Was the training intensifying?
It was. In fact, you mentioned the snow there. We had a lot of our own 1,500 weight Bedfords then. And the transport section and others, they used to... they had to go around every hour and start the engines up of the trucks. Otherwise they would have frozen up. And that was what they had to do, keep going around. They were parked in the street, in the village. And there was always a guard on from the empty section. And they used to start these, all the trucks up, so you'd be ready to move at a moment's notice. And they kept doing that at least every hour, all these trucks. They were Bedfords, 1,500 weight Bedfords.